I don't want a pickle. I just want to ride on my motorcycle. Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is the Nokomoto Podcast, episode number 329 or 339.
I feel like we've been in the 320s for about 20 episodes now.
Or maybe it's 239. I don't think we're at a 300 episode. You know, I have no fucking idea. Whatever. I'm your host, MotoGP. With me is your other host, Swiggy.
Yep.
Coming to you from Moto One Podcast Network Studios Recording Suite B. And we are, what, 6 days away from the Small Stupid Ride?
We are.
So, this coming weekend, Saturday, May the 4th, that will be the Small Stupid Ride. So, we'll be starting at what time, Swigs? What time, mountain time, will we be firing up the bikes, getting on the Discord? All that good stuff.
I feel like we should start. Well, we're right in the middle, aren't we? So we should probably be aiming for like 7 or 8 o'clock. Because if we go any.
Should we go 9 a.m.? Because there's a 400 mile maximum on this one.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I guess we can go a bit later. Yeah. Because then that's, you know, 7 to 11. Well, I guess like 7 to 9 or 8 to 11. 8 to, yeah. That works.
I think we can commit to going at like 12 hours for this.
Mm-hmm.
So we could go as late as 9 p.m. mountain time for people who are struggling to get their, you know, full tank of gas in or whatever, right? There's, you know, weird time differences and things, right? So if you're in Australia, for example, you're just going to have to figure out what time you need to be doing this. But that 12-hour window should be good enough that you can join in there. And, you know, you don't have to do this within the hours that we're doing it, right? That's just the time that we're going to be. We can say that we'll be active. But, you know, if it gets to 6:45 and no one's left in the Discord, right? And we've done the miles, we'll just tune out. That's fine.
Speaking of which, you should join the Discord.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I should. Well, that'll happen. Have you been on it?
Yeah.
Have you been talking with listeners?
Very little, but yes.
Oh, okay. You're better than I am. Is there anyone on there right now?
You know, I don't know if I'm on my phone, actually. I guess I can check. We've got like, I think we've had like maybe 8 or 10 people, someone like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's people planning to do this then, for sure.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I'm really excited about this. So I want to talk about the points for the Small Stupid Ride. I've been thinking about it, and I haven't really come up with anything new since last time, but I've decided sort of on a system. So, someone can write this down. We need you to do your full tank of gas, and getting your full tank of gas is what is the first thing that allows you to just start accruing points, right? If you don't do a full tank of gas, you're ineligible to score points. Now, there's a maximum of 400 miles. So, I guess we want to say that maybe when you hit... So, Swigs, let's say there's a 50-point maximum, right? Because I don't want to have too many categories and things. What's the max points you think we should give someone for getting up to the 400 miles?
Well, I feel like you got to get a passing grade for doing the full distance, right? So.
Well, okay. Well, so there's the full tank of gas, which we'll assume is about 150 miles for most people. Right? That'll be like the average, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll say 150 miles is where it starts. So that gives another 250 miles for getting sort of full points on your miles, right? So what would you say? Out of the 50 available points, make it like getting up to 400 gets you to like 25?
Well, let's we can calculate.
I like that. How about 5 points for every 50 miles you go after your 150, like, you know, tank, right?
Okay, yeah, that works.
5 points for every 50 miles. Or a point for every 10 miles, I guess.
That works. Yep.
Yeah, a point for every 10 miles after you've done your tank. So, you know, assuming your tank's about 150. All right, so that's good. Second, I like, let's say for another 10 points, we'll grade it. So after you've done your ride, you can email in and let us know what you've done on these things. But some of the stuff we're going to score, right? So I think... we want to do best location, right? Or yeah, like your location or destination, just somewhere you stopped, right? So we'll just say location or site visited. How about that? Site visited, up to 10 points. So if you go by, I don't know, like Graceland, for example, that's going to score pretty well with me. That's minimum an 8. Right? Like, can you get your bike onto the property? Right? That's pushing a 9 or 10.
You could be more interesting, you know, a sideshow attraction like the world's largest ball of twine or the world's largest thermometer is always good.
That's excellent.
Maybe, you know, a federal prison might be a good one.
Or a motorcycle museum or whatever. Just a good spot to stop at on a motorcycle trip. Just something like that. If it's the Grand Canyon, you know, that can impress, right? And then I liked one that you came up with. I think we should do another 10 points for... how did you put it? It was like some like found item or something like that. Something like some sort of object, like acquired.
Yeah, just any treasure you find on your journey.
Treasure. That's the best way to put it. Treasure. So we can have up to another out of 10 for treasure. So yeah, give people examples, Swigs.
So this is going to be a broad category, but it can be either something just like found in a like a weird sketchy gas station, like mall ninja weapons, or like a particularly offensive like t-shirt or keychain
sticker. Yeah.
It could be something you found or traded for.
I'll accept photos too. Like if it's a particularly insane tattoo on someone's back in line for gas, right? Like if you find like a pickup truck that on the back of the tailgate has a picture of the pickup truck, which on its tailgate has a picture of the pickup truck, right? Then that a picture of that will count as well for treasure. I'll accept photos as treasure, but you're going to want to keep that separate. Well, I don't know. We'll leave it on a case by case basis, but preferably that is separate from your location. And I think we should also just at the end there, then leave 5 points for X factor, right? Did you ride through a freak blizzard? Did you get like into an accident but continue on your journey anyway? Did you complete this trip with pneumonia, right? Like whatever, something else that makes your, you know, did you lose like your brakes halfway through? Did you perform some miracle repair? Just leave the last 5 points open for something that's completely special to your ride.
Yeah, so I'm going to say this goes under the category of adventure.
Yeah. Just Let's call that adventure factor is good for another 5 yeah. points.
Yeah, so yeah, anything yeah, like inclement weather, massive change in route due to, I don't know, like a forest fire, or yeah, just anything that really just threw a wrench in the works and made your ride more difficult, or yeah, anything that had to be overcome.
I might also award adventure points for anyone that comes up with something that's a great category for the Big Dumb Ride, if you just do some of our work for us. But I think this is a nice, simple way to kind of do a little bit of scoring, right? And so after you've completed your ride, and you know, we'll kind of try to play it close to the vest during the ride so no one gets like disheartened, right? You know, like if someone finds like a, I don't know, like a snake skin hat, like a snake skin top hat inside like a Bucky's restroom, right? That would be like some pretty top treasure, right? But we don't want to discourage people, go, oh, well, there's no point in even looking for stuff for the rest of my ride, right? Anyway, it'll be for bragging rights, probably, but maybe we'll come up with a prize or something. I don't know. We'll see. But I think it's fun just to have a test out a scoring system. So, yeah, just to make sure, recap, we got this. So, you need to do a full tank of gas minimum, but for every mile, 10 miles over 150, you get 1 point. Up to 400, and that's your maximum. For up to 10 points, there's best location. For up to 10 points, there's best treasure. And, well, just location up to 10 points, because not one person's getting the 10 points, right? Everyone can score up to 10. So out of 10 points, treasure, out of 10 points, location, and then 5 points just for adventure factor. I like it.
Yeah. Now, currently there are no prizes. Maybe there will be at some point, but
yeah, we'll
there are. See. This is like Whose Line Is It Anyway. This is all experimental, but these points will generally be a guide as to how good of a time you're having, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say, to get a score, obviously, they will have to be evidence of... There will have to be some documentation and evidence, which can just be posting it in the Discord channel.
Yeah, so, if you just take a picture of your odometer before... Although, I'm also inclined to just, take people in the honor system. But, I mean, why wouldn't you take a picture of your treasure and location, right? Like, it'd be weird if you didn't.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to spam. I'll trust. We don't need to spam and then hunt down pictures after the fact, but you can take them together. Take them and then post them both together. But, obviously, yeah, the whole...
Oh, you know what will make it interesting too, Swigs?
What?
Our odometers track a little differently.
Oh, that's true. We can find out what the difference is.
Well, I know, but I don't remember whose goes a little bit faster. So theoretically, one of us could end up with one more points for mileage than the other.
It's true.
Someone might be doing an extra like circle around town at the end of the ride.
I do remember when we took the Ninja and the W650, there was like a 4% difference. Like, it was pretty big.
And those are both Kawasaki's, too.
Yeah.
I want to say that our odometers were pretty close on the Goldwing and Valkyrie, but definitely were not exactly the same.
Yeah, but it was like 1 mile over 100 miles. It was not...
Yeah, it was like a 1% to 2% difference. Something
I
like
can't
that.
Remember what it was on the Kawasaki's, but it was like 4 to 6 miles difference. Like,
yeah,
it was a lot.
Yeah. Anyway.
What's also weird is that those bikes were only made like 5 years apart or something. Like,
yeah, it's true.
And the other two bikes were made like 20 years apart.
Yeah, they are. So, okay. Well, anyway. Right. So, what else? Is there anything else we want to say about the small, stupid ride? I don't think there's too much left to add at this point. The channel's up. We know what time it's starting. We know what the rules are. We know that people are going to join in. It kind of seems like a done deal. I'm excited. Do we know where we're going?
I think we need to fulfill our mission of getting...
We wanted to take the bikes to the newest Buc-ee's in America.
Yes. We gotta, yeah, we gotta get to the newest Buc-ee's in America. And then we also, we need to get to Wyoming to get, low strength beer. And then I think besides that, we're just gonna do a bunch of riding around the mountains.
So, like, get to Buc-ee's and then turn west.
I think
get into the mountains and then just vaguely go north till we hit Wyoming.
No, I think we should head to the mountains first, then head north into Wyoming, stop in Cheyenne, get the beer, come back south, and then we'll stop at the Buc-ee's at the end as a treat.
You know, you're right. We'll have to double back 15 miles, but that's not a huge deal. But also, this is extremely smart because if we don't find any treasure along the way, I bet we'll find some sort of treasure at Buc-ee's.
I mean, it's guaranteed.
Enough to give ourselves like 3 points or something, right? Well, here's the other thing, too. Are we going to allow team efforts here? Or is everyone have to be on an individual basis? So, like if we ride and one of us finds, like, amazing treasure, right? Because think about it. If you're riding with another person, that could put you at extreme disadvantage. Because, like, what if you do go to Graceland? Like, are you going to, like, paper, scissors, rock for who gets to use it for their location points?
I think it
only makes sense that riding teams get to share points.
I think teams can share everything. I think teams can share everything, but if you wanted to, you could make different decisions on treasure.
Oh, like if one person was like, dude, your ninja sword's dumb. That's not going to get 10 points. My treasure is going to... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, optionally, you can share things.
But I think we want to encourage people to get a group out rather than just do it solo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, so we'll see how it goes. I mean, this is going to be the first one, so you never know.
You never know.
Yeah, and I guess points will be handed out arbitrarily. Well, except for the miles, which are just going to be based on whatever miles you did.
Yeah, whatever whim we have is how many points you'll get. So you have to, like, send in an email with or something with, yeah, an email with photos and sort of your ride story. And then we'll calculate the points and then we'll see who got the most points.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll score ourselves, but obviously we can't win. But we'll score ourselves for fun anyway. Okay, so I think that leaves us getting to best worst bike in the world this week. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Okay, this is best worst bike in the world this week. This is the part of the show where we each choose a motorcycle. We don't know what each other have chosen. It's always a surprise. Swigs, if someone decides that what you chose as best bike in the world this week is fucking dumb, where shall they send their gripes and complaints to?
They can send them to contact@nokomotopodcast.com.
Excellent. All right, Swigs, you have best bike in the world this week.
I do.
And are you ready to reveal it?
I am.
And the best bike in the world this week is...
I'm going to say any 2022 to 2024 Suzuki GSXR 600.
Okay.
And I don't believe we have done this one before.
I feel like we've done the Gixxer 600, but maybe not. We've definitely done the SRAD version. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so the current Gixxer 600. Huh.
And I guess this could broadly extend to other years as well. The reason I picked this one is because, you know what? Sport bikes aren't dead. Inline fours aren't dead. And they'll never be dead. Because we will
not as long as Suzuki's in business.
Because we will always have the Gixxer 600. The bike of zero down loans. The bike of just terrible ideas. This thing will always exist. I did just look around, and, you know, you go look around at the other competitors, you know, the big four, you know, Yamaha doesn't even have the R6 anymore. Kawasaki is a little bit more expensive, and they're also throwing out their, they're pimping all their accessories and everything. Suzuki, instead, just puts a loan calculator on the page.
Yeah.
It's right there. What is this bike for a 60-month, for a 5-year loan, zero down and 10%? How much is it going to cost you to get this bike? Let's fucking go. Like,
there's a get pre-approved button.
Yeah. This is on the sales page. Like, it's not even a link to another page. It's like,
I don't even think Harley Davidson does this.
Dude, you can swing it. You can totally afford this.
The base price is still under 12 grand. I mean, yeah, for such a high performance machine, yeah, okay. You know, also, this bike has a feature that other 600s don't have. So if you're in stop and go traffic on the highway or any busy major road and you're sitting there and the bike's getting hot, the dash has a little feature where an arrow will point in between the lanes of traffic and the screen will just say, go on, do it. But only if it's a state where lane splitting is illegal.
Do you know what the other thing is?
What's that?
If you look, we're on the store page. This is the gallery. It's two photos. It's one directly sideways and one like with a little bit of an angle in profile.
Well, there's some color choices there though.
Yeah, but there's just the same pictures, like with the three different color options. This you can't even on like right now, we are looking at this bike. There is no picture of the dash here.
It's like, not important.
Yeah, it's not important. If you go through the features, it's all performance-related features. They'll tell you all about the suspension. They'll tell you about the motor. They'll tell you about the rider modes. They'll tell you about the twin spar frame. They'll tell you about the brakes. But there's no talk of Bluetooth or a TFT display or
it doesn't have that unnecessary bullshit. It's just a go fast machine.
Yeah, it just goes really fast. That's it.
It goes really fast, really uncomfortably. Yeah, that's what it does.
And that's it. And I don't know, there's something beautiful about that.
It's one of the very few bikes that can lower your IQ as soon as you get on it. Yeah. And weirdly, that's a good thing. I don't know why it shouldn't be, but it is. We've got a competition super sport with, you know, integrated turn signal headlights. I can only assume it's to keep costs down because this is the best-selling 600.
Well, it's also a feature for the rider because you can remove both at the same time. It's more.
That's right. Extra dangerous with only one deletion from your bike's bodywork. That's a good point. That's a bonus. Yeah, all of your rear there, just your turn signal stems and everything comes off the back super conveniently. So you can do the tail tidy and make your license plate and rear lights illegal with minimum effort. I like it. When you inevitably spray paint your rims, they're only three spoked. It's easier, right? There's, let's see here. What, I mean, there's not much else to it. There's, there's no cap, like aerodynamic cap to put over the pillion seat because you would just throw that in the trash immediately anyway. You're a Gixxer owner. There's, I would prefer it to just already come with a smoked out double bubble windshield, but you know, we can't have everything. But other than that, yeah, I have no complaints. If I was going to buy a 600, I mean, it's really in between this and a 636. I like the little extra oomph and just knowing that you've got those extra 36 cc's from the Kawasaki. But yeah, the price is compelling on this. The styling's really grown on me over the years with that long sort of almost Hayabusa-ish long single headlights look.
Yeah, the only tragedy is the fact that they pulled out of MotoGP. Because this racing livery is fantastic.
The Gixxer 600's always been on point with the colors. Always. My favorite one actually is the one that was more like the GP bike that was like all blue with the high-vis yellow Suzuki logo across all the panels.
That was a good one, yeah.
That was a really good one. And you might still be able to get that on the 750 in 1 liter.
Well, here's the thing.
But whatever. This thing looks fast when it's sitting still.
Here's the other thing.
A hooligan machine. Yeah.
If just shy of 12,000 is too much for you. You know, some people do this. They still list the previous model year for 200 less, you know, for a brand new bike. You know, it's last year's model. Not many upgrades, but you can get the older paint schemes.
Yeah, this is weaker. Well, that one's not. The blue one's not.
But what
not
I haven't seen anybody else do is they also list the 2022. They list this one as well.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's just, the only difference is paint schemes.
Mm.
Oh, and it's another $100 cheaper to just have no choice.
This is another $200 off to go back to the 2022. I'm sure underneath they're all the exact same bike.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They must be.
But yeah, they just kind of...
Well, Suzuki is the company of bold new graphics every year. I mean, it's them. Harley-Davidson really had a lot going on for not updating their bikes and only doing new paint schemes. But Suzuki has really come from way back in the pack to challenge for bold new graphics supremacy in the motorcycle world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it used to annoy me and I used to think, well, Suzuki's just cheaping out. But then I realized cheaping out is the whole point, right? Why wouldn't you? It's so easy to just do new colors each year, right? And considering how much these things are crashed, they need to just ultra streamline it, right? So, like, every year from the dealership, you can get some sort of exclusive paint scheme. But they also need to just have a rainbow of different paint schemes. Like, they need to hook up with like, suppliers on Alibaba and Banggood and whatever. Mm-hmm. And every Suzuki dealership needs to have very low-quality replacement fairings in all kinds of crazy schemes.
What they really need to do is You know, like that helmet design that has like the cutout sections, and each section has a percent in it, which is like the likelihood of that part of the helmet getting hit.
Yeah.
They need to have like that kind of cutout on the fairing and like find out the probability of each part of the bike getting
all the impact points,
like, and take all the high impact points and make those separate orderable fairing pieces.
Oh, I thought you were saying just put all the points, all the places where riders crash their bikes the most often, like make that a paint scheme like the helmet.
Well, that's an option too. But I like, but also I would say like, hey, if like 60% of the time one of these two parts gets like these two parts of the fairings get scratched up, let's make that a separate fairing piece.
That is a very good idea. Yeah. I like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, but let's just face it. It would just say like 100% on the tank, right?
Yeah. Like,
and the tail would be like 60%. Okay. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about this. We know the numbers, right? It's a modern 600. It's fast as fuck. It's an inline four. 600 Gixxer. It does all the go fast things. It's unusable horsepower. It doesn't quite have the torque of a liter bike, but it's still just stupid fast.
But what it is it's also got that same spirit of kind of 80s and 90s like sports cars and older race bikes of, it's not this fancy commuter, it's not the status symbol, it's just for fucking racing and going fast, and that's it. And there's a purity in that.
Well, weirdly,
it's pure spirit,
even though it's a brand new bike and it's got an MSRP of, you know, $11,500, it's weirdly still cheap horsepower, because this has got to be what, 130 ish horsepower, 136, 132.
I can't remember what this
it's is. Making more than 120 something, or it might be 120 something, but if you like flash the ECU you get 130 something. It's a lot of power, and it's gonna smoke almost everything, and it's super lightweight, and it's gonna go around. It's definitely gonna smoke. If you're skilled enough, you can go to a track day and probably beat almost everybody that's on a leader bike with this, because it's all, you know, the skill is just going to come into play on the track, right? And you can just take it stock, take it to the track, and if you're racing against a bunch of other amateurs, you could just win on this if you're good enough. It's kind of that simple. Yeah. So, I mean, I've seen videos of guys good enough on like 60 horsepower supermotos passing people on these and 1 liter bikes. I mean, the 1 liters catch up on the straight and everything, but yeah. It's the mid displacement end game, really. Okay. Do we want to move on to worst bike in the world this week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. And the worst bike in the world this week is the 2024 Honda GP bike. So, I think last year I declared that the 2023 RSV, you know, what are the RSV 218 or the RS 218V? What's the?
It's the RC 213V.
RC213V. Yeah, I didn't think it could get any worse, but it did. I mean, we're not even talking about getting into the top 10 here. We're talking about
points.
Can they score points? I mean, as a team, how many points does Honda even have right now?
That's actually a really good question.
Like, less than 10? As a like, if we take Repsol Honda and the satellite team, I mean, combined points, they probably have less than 50, right?
Yeah, let me see if I can find standings for the manufacturers.
It is shocking. Anytime they are in the points, they crash out. Their superstar right now is Zarco, who's been on the bike for 4 races. And Zarco is crashing. He has crashed in 50% of the races this year, at least.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting to the point, like, he found the points.
So last is LCR with 9 points. And Repsol has 12 points. After 4 21 rounds.
21 points between all 4 bikes. That's 8 races.
That's basically
8 races out of 24 bikes running. They are doing less than 1 point per bike per race.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, you know, there was that stage where, like, okay, yeah, they were, you know, in denial for a long time, you know, because the bike was getting worse over the years, but they had Marc Márquez, and Márquez could make anything work. Even when every other rider got on the bike and said, "What the fuck is going on?" he was able to just keep it going and keep the magic happening. But then, you know, you would have thought, okay, the 2023 season has to be rock bottom. Nope.
No.
It's not.
Apparently there was further to fall. Yeah, I mean, they're doing like 0.7 points per bike per race. That's just so bad.
And that's with 4 bikes. Like, after a certain point, like, you can't do, unless all 4 of your bikes are, like, consistently the 4 last bikes, it's like, mathematically, like, there aren't that many other riders to take up the spots in front of you. Like,
right.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's something else. So conspiracy theory time. Is Honda pushing for this engine change and displacement change in 2026 or whatever, or 2027? I think it's 2027 season, right? They're pushing for the displacement change.
I can't remember if it's 26 or 27. I want to say it's 27.
Yeah. Is Honda pushing for that to get the playing field leveled?
I think they just want to wipe the slate clean and...
Yeah.
There's something going on there. Or maybe it's maybe Honda itself doesn't want to develop a new engine or update the current V4. And then the race team is secretly like, we have to do an engine displacement. And they're just begging Dorna to do it, to make Honda make a new engine for them. I don't know. There's something going on there, but...
I'm just saying, their results are so bad. It's like...
At this point...
I'm expecting Honda to call in bomb threats to a bunch of the races. You know, like a kid who hasn't studied for a test, right? Just to try to get out of the embarrassment of performing so badly.
I mean, if it continues on at this rate, then... In 2025, Honda might as well just buy Grassini's GP23.
Right.
And Honda can just run a Ducati because it'll do better.
Yeah. Well, you know, Yamaha isn't doing much better, right?
That's true.
So I wonder if the Japanese manufacturers are behind this move to push for a displacement change. I don't know. I don't really have many answers or theories beyond that. like why it's necessary. I think everyone's pretty happy with how GP is right now. It's almost kind of refreshing that Honda has been doing this badly after decades of domination. Like, mm-hmm. they'll eventually get their shit together. Yeah. And in the meantime, it's like, yeah, I know you have to have a Ducati or maybe a KTM or Aprilia to win. But we went through so many years of Ducati being absolute dog shit. Like, at the height of his powers, Rossi could only squeeze out one win per season on a Ducati, right? And, Casey Stoner could do it, but, like, Nicky Hayden couldn't make it work, and so many great riders couldn't make the Ducati work for them until this latest incarnation of Ducati. So, yeah, the bring up the Honda on the screen here, because we've talked about its livery before, but, like, what else? Like, what? How could it have gotten worse? What? Is there anything that we notice on this machine? And if we can't find anything, that may be the problem, too. That they're not taking enough risk with the bike itself. So, there's really nothing in the aerodynamics that's radically different, except they sort of kind of copied the KTM mustache versus the aero that they had before. So, okay, at least copy. But if you're going to copy that, like, try to copy the Ducati aerodynamics, right? Those are the better ones. Like, why are you going after KTM's mustache instead of Ducati's? So that's weird. Can we get like a big high-res image of something? Because we know that Honda is definitely lacking in peak horsepower, but the bike used to sort of rev up a little easier to make up for that. And we know that their big thing that they were lacking in was the aero package. So there's still no Thagomizer on it, right? We don't have anything interesting going on with the front fender. We don't seem to have those vents for the brake cooling. Like, even just on a psychological level, why can't you just throw on a bunch of bits that the engineers are like, yeah, this will absolutely make no difference, like good or bad on the bike, just to make the riders think that they've got some sort of cool piece of aero that might make them do better?
Yeah.
Right? There's not even anything fun on here to say, like, oh, what's that crazy thing all about?
Well, there's also things like, do you remember on, like, when Marc Marquez was actually winning on the bike, they had that beautiful, like, there were only a few shots where you could actually see it, but they had that hand-welded titanium exhaust that probably cost more than most people's motorcycles.
Though guaranteed,
and yeah. Was guaranteed to get absolutely destroyed in any crash. And they must have had just, like, one guy, like, just doing a bunch of these. And, like, there was the one that was on the back cylinder, had to actually, to be the same length, that had, like, a 360 turn in it. And it was all just, like, individual cut and welded pieces.
Yeah, it was like a two-stroke expansion chamber on this 1-liter four. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, and it was just, like, 30 segments, and it was... And that was like on display, and you could see that. And this just looks kind of, I mean, it doesn't look anywhere near as, I mean, this is all obviously kind of cosmetic, but there was, I don't know, Honda has not. No,
it's definitely a racing thing that sometimes they'll make no changes to a bike, but tell the rider that they made a change. So the rider has this sort of psychological thing of like, oh yeah, there's the extra power, and just sort of ride differently or ride with more confidence. And it turns out just thinking you've got an advantage is an advantage all itself sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So what have they got to lose with just throwing a bunch of crazy ass shit on the bike? You're already at the back of the pack, right?
Yeah.
At this point, it's definitely just a complete lack of imagination on the part of Honda, because they've just kind of changed the shape of the tank. And remember when Jorge Lorenzo got a new tank shape from Honda, and then like got like two race wins.
That was with Ducati.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then Honda got him, and they were like, "We'll give you any tank shape you want." But I don't know. They don't seem to really. We used to see all sorts of new crazy stuff coming out from Honda all the time. There was a time when Honda just hired like every person who knew how to program an ECU just so the competition couldn't have them. Where's that competitive spirit these days?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. There's nothing cool going on here. I don't like it. No, sir. I don't like it. I want to hear rumors of them going back and like trying crazy ideas, like doing the pneumatically pressured valve lifters again.
There's that. Something like, or even like when they reversed the engine.
Yeah, the reverse crank direction. Just throw that in there. Be like, "Mir, by the way, your crank turns a completely different direction." He's like, "Couldn't you have switched that out in practice?" And they're like, "No, just go out there and do it, right?" Or not even reverse it. Just tell him, "By the way, the crank's running backwards now." And Mir doesn't know how this works. Just be like, "Yeah, we flicked a button. The crank goes backwards now, right?" Put two chains on the bike, like one on either side of the wheel. I don't know. Just something stupid. It doesn't matter. Anything. Just to give them something.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately what's happening is that Honda really doesn't like. And in fairness, Honda.
Winning. Though they don't like.
Well, Honda's kind of gotten somewhat screwed. When you look at kind of all the rule changes of like the last 10 years, it's all been kind of taking away all of their toys and keeping all of Ducati's, which kind of sucks. You know, Honda couldn't have their like super, super hyper specialized ECU anymore.
Has Honda even bothered to make a rear ride height device yet?
I don't know. I don't think so. They don't.
Well, I mean, like,
is that they? Don't, I don't think they have.
I know I'm not an HRC engineer, but it seems kind of obvious to me that this is a crucial element of KTM and Ducati's success, and it might be worth imitating.
Yeah, I think ultimately I think it's the issues they're having are really just absolutely born out of stubbornness and not wanting to have to copy Ducati. And I think they'd rather Ducati not have their toys, since all their toys got taken away.
But that's just not how racing works.
I know.
Soichiro Honda would be absolutely fucking livid if he saw this situation. He'd be like, "Listen, we're gonna try an 8-stroke engine, right? We're gonna do something."
Yeah, this is the company that built the V5. Right?
Right, yeah. He's like, "Listen, we're going to go to like a 2-cylinder 8-stroke or something, you know, a 3-cylinder 6-stroke, And it's gonna fire on every stroke and or on every like rotation of the crank, and I don't he would do something. He's like, okay, we won't have top speed, but it's gonna hook up like you won't believe, or something crazy. Because whatever they're doing now ain't moving the fucking needle. So speaking of moving the needle, did you see KTM's new winglet on the front fender?
I didn't pick it out or notice it, but
oh, it's good. So
are we just fender, gonna roll straight into MotoGP talk?
Yeah, let's go into MotoGP talk. So check it out. The fender, like halfway, like about the point that it starts getting to the front of the nose of the bike, it's like chopped off, and there's like a little miniature Formula One wing like glued on the front of it. And I'll give you one guess as to how I feel about that. It's marvelous.
Let me see if I can find an image here.
Yeah, and this is the kind of shit that like Honda needs to be trying. There's, you know, Ducati's got new aero, KTM's got new aero. Like, did you find the picture there?
Maybe.
I don't think that's it. I mean, there may not be a lot of pictures of it. You'd have to find something that's like, you know, like from this weekend, because it only like first appeared this weekend.
Okay, I may have to pull it up from the feed or something at some point.
But it's there, and it's, I mean, it looks dumb, but that's a good thing. Anyway, so MotoGP. I have absolutely nothing to say about Moto 3 this round in Jerez.
Me neither. And it's not that it wasn't like necessarily good racing. It's more that, like, again, I don't see anything happening that like points to what's going to happen next season. Who's going to get promoted to Moto 2? Who has been here way too long and I'm fed up with? Like, there's so far been nothing I've been really invested in. And honestly, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's Moto 3. It's the introductory. It's just
every year one class is kind of boring, and for me it's Moto 3 this year.
And honestly, we've kind of been spoiled for like the last 10 years of just utterly insane like Moto 3 competitions, just with that were always high impact on what's going to be happening in the next few years. And now it seems like we had all that talent coming at once, and now we're just in a little bit of a lull.
Wait, 2016 to 2020 was an absolute snooze fest for Moto 2, don't forget.
That's true, yeah.
Like, how long did Tom Luthi just hang out in Moto 2 taking up space?
Yeah.
Deep cut, Tom Luthi, right? Or whatever, a bunch of races I could mention. So, yeah. Moto 3, we're just waiting for something to happen, kind of, you know. This would be a good time for someone to just storm the Red Bull Rookies Cup and then just get interjected into Moto 3 in the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. This would be a really good time, competition-wise, to do that. So I say we just move to...
I've been watching every Moto 3 race, but like I'm not invested in watching free practices or qualifying.
I watched a lot of it this weekend. I watched the press conferences on Thursday. I watched all of... I didn't watch the free practices, but I watched all of the practice sessions and the qualifying sessions, except for Moto 3. I only watched the race, and I'll be honest, I skipped the last four laps. I just came back. I was like, oh, that's who won. I was absolutely glued to Moto 2 especially, and GP this weekend.
Mm. Because, well, let's talk about Moto 2.
Let's talk about Moto 2. Holy shit. Oh, my God. Our boy is on fucking fire. you know, we were early money on Joe Roberts. We spent years talking about him, seemingly pointlessly to many of you, just to get to this moment where, albeit early in the season, Joe Roberts is leading the points and has the most podiums this year so far. We've got consistency. We've got it in flyaways. And Jerez makes a difference. Jerez being one of these races, right? So obviously he's got a little bit of home court advantage at COTA. But at Jerez, all the other riders are probably more familiar with that track than he is. So, you know, they kind of, a lot of people think that MotoGP doesn't really start until Jerez, because Jerez is such an equalizer of a track. It's like Simon Crafar was saying at the beginning of the coverage this week, that there's no way to get an advantage at Jerez. You could only be at a disadvantage not being a European rider.
Mm-hmm.
You either are super familiar with the track and you know every inch of it, or you don't know it quite as well as everyone else. And combine that with the fact that there's only three or four places in the whole track to really make to pass someone. And all of a sudden it's like, who cares how fucking fast your bike is? Who cares? Like, it, this is skill. And you know, so if you win Jerez, it's a big deal, or just podium at Jerez, it's a really big deal. And he did that. He did it in Portimao, and he did it in a flyaway at COTA, and he's done it now at Jerez.
To be fair, COTA isn't exactly a flyaway for him.
No, it's not for him.
Like, I mean, actually, technically, it kind of is. Well, I mean, he raced there in Moto America. So
yeah.
But like, the way that everyone else thinks that COTA's really fucking weird, like, everyone knows Jerez. There's nobody even in Moto 3 is racing at Jerez for the first time. Like, that's...
Right.
It's like Laguna Seca, in that it's one of those tracks that just everyone in Europe just knows.
Yeah. So, here's the question. How high do we get our hopes up? Because it looks really good right now. But I don't know that I can get my heart broken again. Or do I just have to put myself out there all vulnerable and just take the plunge?
I'm just putting everything on black.
Okay.
I'm all in. He's going to win it. He's got it.
I don't even need him to win it. I just need him to be consistent throughout the season. I can't, like, 8 races from now, I can't be like, there's Joe in 14th again. Right? I just need him to stay in, like, the top 6. That's really all I need. But he needs to be relevant throughout the rest of the season. I don't need him to win the season. I'd like to see him pull out like 2 race wins. He's got a strong chance in India. Don't forget the new track in like Kazakhstan or whatever is going to be interesting. That's going to be a bit of an equalizer, I imagine.
Well, you also have to think, and you also have to keep in mind, just mathematically, like, how many, with 3 second places and being the current points champ, the points leader, how many people can simultaneously get ahead of him in points? Like, mathematically, if you just equally distributed the points to get him to drop the lowest.
Well, he's only got, like, a 5-point lead or something?
Right, but as you go further down the pack, you've got more and more points difference. So, like, if he didn't go into another race for the rest of the season, and you mathematically distributed the points, which is, what's the least number of points we can give this many people to get above Joe Roberts? He's still, like, 7th. Like, it's actually really hard to drop. I mean, it'd be impossible for him to get less than fifth at this point.
No, I'm not talking about like top six in the points overall.
Oh, you mean
for the
in
season.
Each race?
I mean in each race. I need him to be at the sharp end of the pack.
Yeah. Well, and again, you know, in this race, he matched pace with Fermin Aldeguer. We should actually talk about the fucking race.
This is true. Yeah.
So there's a few things to go over. One is a really big factor in this Moto 2 season is that Canet crashed and injured himself in free practice.
Right.
And did he break his tibia?
I can't remember.
But yeah, he broke a bone, and he's probably not going to be back racing for a few weeks. So he missed out on this race. He's probably going to miss out on the next one. Past that, you know, riders are totally cool with just taking a shit ton of painkillers and riding it out. So who knows? Past that, you know, famously Rossi rode with a broken leg. Like,
yeah.
Just walked up to his, well, you know, yeah, walk, yeah, got up, got off his bike, and then just went immediately to the crutches. Like, that's the thing riders do. But he missed this race. He'll probably miss another race. So that's a big contender out there. Fermin Aldeguer won, but he, you know, Joe matched pace with him. But also, he's got a secured ride next year. And Aldeguer will just put it all on the line and crash out. He's still prone to doing that. And so there's, although he's stiff competition, there's a lot of volatility in there. And then we should talk about how Joe actually got up and got his second place, because he was fastest in practice.
Yeah.
But
yeah, his qualifying didn't go very well.
Yeah, he ended up qualifying, I think, in like 9th or 10th.
I think it was 11th. I think he started in 11th, fell back to 12th, and then worked his way back up to second place. But he was just fast, and then just the way the timing worked out and his position in qualifying, he just couldn't get on his like fast line and put in a real hot qualifying time. He kept like getting like half a second back, and then everyone behind him would come back with slightly faster time. There's this like no man's land of qualifying from like fourth to ninth place where all the times are so tight, and it's just, unless you're on the front row, it's almost just random luck where you are from like fourth back to 12th, you know?
Yeah.
Because the times just
get
so tight.
Well, the other thing is that Joe really does, he does go all in on the qualifying time in a way that I don't think he really has to. He does the thing where, like, he doesn't go out onto the track for, like, the first 4 minutes, then goes out, he puts in, like, one or two actual times, comes back, gets a tire change, and then he's really only got, like, two shots at actually setting a time. And I don't know if that's the best qualifying strategy. It's,
I mean, his coach is John Hopkins.
It's
and
true.
He's got a lot of experience in this. And you know what? We need to talk about how good the bike is, which means we need to talk about OnlyFans.
I guess we do, yeah.
We've briefly mentioned that the main sponsor for this team is OnlyFans. And I love it. It's a new sponsor for the sport. It's curious that they moved in at Moto 2 instead of sponsoring a GP team, right? But hey, I'm all about it. American Racing, you know, OnlyFans American Racing. Pretty fucking hilarious. But, you know, OnlyFans must be pumping in some fucking money, because that bike is fucking good this year. And you can't just have magical technology in Moto 2. It's a spec class, essentially. Although they're running the Bosque Oscuro chassis, which by all indication is better than the Kallax. Like,
I still know nothing about this new frame.
I don't know anything new about it either, just other than there is this new frame. It's built by like one of the team Moto2 team owners, like his company. I mean, it's a fucking rad frame, apparently, and it works really well with these tires, and Joe Roberts is working really well with these tires, but I'm guessing that OnlyFans is pumping some fucking money into this thing, and as a result, that, but you know, because how do you make a Moto2 bike better than other bikes, right? It's in the suspension, it's in, you know, just other components like that, you know? But the I don't know what swing arm they're running versus others. I don't know what rear and front suspension they're allowed to run that's different than other bikes. They all run the same bodywork. They all run the same engine. So it's got to be kind of in the suspension, in the setup, in the money to pay mechanics, in the.
I would imagine it'd be as much about data as anything else,
perhaps. Yeah,
but
the American racing team has whatever kind of gone from dog shit to having like kind of the best bike on the fucking grid.
They're doing something right, that's for sure. Yeah, so even though, you know, like after the first turn, you know, Joe Roberts didn't qualify well, fell back to like, I think he actually fell back. Yeah, so he fell back to like 12th. And then.
Yeah, he had a bad first start and first lap.
But if you take out the first lap, Joe matched Fermin Aldeguer's pace lap for lap, as well as him having the fastest lap of the race while overtaking 10 people.
Yeah, if you just take the distance that they both covered during the race, like, it's really fucking close. Like, he essentially just did, like, what Fermin Aldeguer did, right? Like, I don't remember what the distance between them was, but I want to say it was, like, less than a second.
Yeah, I think in the end,
around 1 second, and he probably started a second behind him in, like, you know, 10th place.
I think at the end it was like a half. Well, I'll pull up the timing, but I want to say it was like a half second gap on the last lap.
If it was a half second gap, then he might have covered more distance in a faster time than Fermin Aldeguer during the race, right? Like, he may have been objectively faster.
Let's see.
Anyway, so all this is leading up to, with the American team and OnlyFans and everything, leads to, well, there's an American team in MotoGP this year, which we haven't talked too much about, but Trackhouse Racing, I think, was like a NASCAR team, or like is also a NASCAR
team. Okay, sorry.
Team?
No, it was 1.2 seconds.
Okay, so
yeah.
I mean,
but yeah, but there was a time when he was like 3 seconds behind,
right? Maybe more. Yeah, yeah. And he fought it up to, yeah, he ate in like an yeah, yeah. Maybe if the race was 5 laps longer or something, who knows? Who knows? But Fermin, yeah, was going really fucking fast. But anyway, all this is to say that Trackhouse Racing in MotoGP has vocalized that they would like to have an American racer on an American team in MotoGP. And really their only choice is Joe Roberts. So basically the scuttlebutt is that if he keeps this up, we might get an American in GP again. Not only that, an American on a bike that it's not impossible to win on. An Aprilia.
Yeah.
It's not completely crazy that next year we could have Joe Roberts.
Can you imagine in like 2021 saying, you know what? We're going to get Joe Roberts on an Aprilia in MotoGP and he's probably going to win some races. You'd be saying, what the fuck are you smoking? How could this possibly happen?
I don't know if I can go as far to say that Joe on a Trackhouse Aprilia is probably going to win some races, but it's not impossible. But if this happens,
I'll temper
you
that a little
cannot
bit and just say
stop
he came...
me from buying a team shirt.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I would say more like it's very likely he would, within a couple of years, he'd get podiums at the very least. Because, I mean, it's not that big a jump anymore between Moto 2 and Moto 3.
Well, not for Pedro Acosta. It passed me a beer, but, like, yeah, we gotta...
I mean, for me, it's... Like, I remember we were just saying, like, you know, Joe, could you just, like, stay in the top 10? Can we just get some consistent top 10s? We don't need you to become a champion and you know, keep our hopes and dreams alive.
Right. We just need something to hang our hats on.
Yeah. And you know, I was saying for a long time, you know, I don't expect Joe Roberts to take over. I don't expect him to do amazing. But I expect him to kind of like, you know, because we had so many years without any Americans in any class that it was like, okay, well, Joe, you're doing this. You've got the representation. You can be kind of a passport ride. And, you know, kind of pave the way for other American riders because, you know, it's kind of a big culture difference going over and racing in Europe. So, like, can you just keep doing what you're doing and, like, build out this kind of infrastructure for other riders to come after you? I never actually expected Roberts to just start doing really well and really having a shot. And now here he is.
Yeah, I thought this year in Moto 2 was going to be the year that I just watched Jake Dixon slowly build up a points lead and, like, win in, like, you know, the second to last race of the year. You know, maybe fall behind 10, 20 points somewhere around the middle of the season and build it back up again and then finally clinch it, right? That's what I kind of thought this Moto 2 season was going to be for me. I never thought that Joe Roberts would be a points leader and look so strong.
Look, John McPhee set a really high bar, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I want to be excited about it, but if he can just keep it up for the first half of the season, even with an implosion, we've just got to get to that that contract signature with Trackhouse. That's all we've got to do to bring this home. Mm-hmm. I'll call this season a fucking win if we just get that Trackhouse contract signed.
I mean, the other thing I will say is, yeah, and that is ultimately the thing, is I just want to see an American flag in MotoGP again.
Right.
I just want to see that. But you know, even in the race, like, this isn't just, like, national pride talking here. This was, like, I think the commentators talked about Joe Roberts more than they talked about Fermin Aldeguer.
Oh, like 10 to 1 they did. I think Joe Roberts' name was mentioned more than Mark Marquez's.
Yeah.
Like he got so much camera time.
Well, because they were talking about initially, they're like, oh my God, you know, Joe Roberts was so fast, but you know, he's back in 12th, so he's not going to have a great race. And then it was, oh, Joe Roberts moved up into 10th. That's pretty good. Okay, cool. Let's follow this close battle at the front. And then they're like, oh, couple riders crashed out. Joe Roberts is up in 8th now. Okay. And then he takes over. So, oh, now he's up in 6th place now. And you know, Joe Roberts just set the fastest lap of the race. And then they're looking at it, it's like, Joe Roberts is like taken 3/10 from the lead. Like he's closing the gap up. And it's like,
well, then he hunted down Garcia, like, who was the points, like, leader, and then the points lead inverted.
Yeah, because they were like, you know, if Joe Roberts could catch up to Garcia, That would be great, because he would actually take the points lead, because he's only 2 points behind right now. But then they were like, oh, but that won't happen. And then on the next lap. So Joe Roberts just took 0.4 off of the gap.
Right.
And there's 13 laps left in this race. And then it was, oh,
and he passed Gonzalez for second.
And then he passed him. It's like, okay, so Joe Roberts, he's got his comfortable third. It's 1.2 seconds to Gonzalez.
Yeah, they're like, if Fermin Altegaer makes a mistake, it's not impossible for Joe to win this.
It just went from absolutely absurd, Joe Roberts race the scuff, to just climbing higher and higher, and
to being the story of the day. Yeah. And he just looked like he was on rails the whole time. It was because I'll admit, I was kind of thinking like, Joe has done this to me before and then crashed out and broken my heart. You know, but then
and
I was
especially
like,
when they go,
he looks
when
so solid, I don't think he's coming off the bike.
But it's all, and this is why the one race per weekend is the superior format, because every time it went to that nose camera on the bike and you just saw the chatter and the camera just went, whoa, and you're like, did he crash? It's like, oh no, that's what every turn looks like. You just get that, you get those butterflies, and you get that everything is just on a knife's edge, and that's what makes it so exciting.
You know? Yeah, so it was a great race. It was great to see Fermin put a weekend together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Qualify on pole, take the win, just, you know. Because I want Fermin to come into GP like Pedro Acosta.
Yeah.
Because honestly, it's looking by the end of this season or next season that Pedro Acosta is just going to be like dominating GP, right? And he needs some competition. So let's talk about GP. In the sprint race, let's start with third place, was almost Quartararo.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, 7 people crashed out in front of Quartararo, and he was kind of gifted third place.
Well, let's just start off by saying that the sprint race was a fucking bloodbath.
It was. Which I enjoyed. Well, I guess the track was still a little wet in places from rain earlier in the day and the wet qualifying.
They were saying it was still like kind of a wet track, and well, not like wet, but like
damp.
That tiniest little bit that matters a lot when you're on
the edge of traction.
Prototype like slicks. Yeah, which matters a lot.
So
but
it was
then
all
also
about turn 5, people were washing out. 4 of them at once at one turn.
I think Simon Crafar was saying the wind was really bad as well and was probably a big factor too. But yeah, just absolute slaughterhouse. Just so several million dollars of motorcycles were destroyed that day.
Yeah. But, so Quartararo seemed absolutely shocked that he was on the podium celebration. And then, like, an hour later, they checked his tire pressure, and he was bumped back a place rather than disqualified? Did they give him a time penalty, or what was the deal with the with
I don't
that?
Know how they calculated it, but they put him back one place.
They put him back one place, so he went and gave the bronze trophy to Danny Pedrosa.
What was the trophy? It was the medal.
Or the medal, that's right, because it's not a trophy. Yeah.
And this is how you know that, like, Danny Pedrosa isn't coming back, is that he signed it and gave it back to Quartararo.
Is that what he did?
Yeah.
Oh, Danny Pedrosa, what a fucking legend. Right. So kind of similarly, Pedro Acosta was gifted second place a little bit. Because he started back in like 10th place or something.
Yeah,
he
his did, qualifying he had a rough was qualifying. Really bad. Yeah.
But his pace was pretty good. And then in the GP race, Pedro Acosta went from like he dropped back to 14th or something, and he made his way back up to like 6th or 7th, something like that.
Sorry, what, in the second race?
Yeah, in the Grand Prix. He made a lot of places, but he still didn't really finish that well.
He finished in 10th.
Oh, at one point I thought he was... No, you're right. Because there was a huge gap to ninth to Vinales. Yeah, he kind of got swallowed up in a slow pack, and he made his way to the front of it, but then that was really all he was going to do. But, you know, he scored points, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, rookie. Like, if this is his worst race of the year so far, he's doing pretty good as a rookie, right?
Yeah.
So he got a sprint podium in 10th place. So he scored more points than most this weekend.
I mean, he hasn't yet been outscored in a race by a Honda, so that's
that. He's doing a lot better than most Aprilias and all the Yamahas and Hondas, yeah. Right. But so this wasn't Pedro like doing superhuman things, but if this was any other rookie, this would still be considered a very good weekend for a rookie.
Yeah.
This would be a shockingly, like, just the sprint podium second place would be considered a shockingly good weekend for any rookie. Fourth weekend in, right? Getting a sprint mm-hmm. podium and then still scoring points in the GP. That would be comment worthy for any, like, yeah.
I mean, we're at the stage where we don't even know, like, what is Acosta's preferred track.
Right. Yeah. It's incredible. Who won the sprint race? It was Marquez crashed out of the sprint race.
The sprint race was
Martin, wasn't it?
Yep, it was Jorge Martin.
Right. And then Martin goes and just randomly crashes out of the GP lead with, like, a comfortable lead?
No, it was pretty close when he crashed out.
Bagnaia was putting pressure on him, but Bagnaia wasn't, like, to overtake him or anything.
No, but it was either 4/10 or 6/10 in a lead, and they were putting in some pretty hot laps at the time. But, yeah. They were just, I think they were both kind of trying to pull away and create an early gap, and he just crashed out.
So this weekend for me with Marquez showed me that if Marquez had made this move to Ducati 2 years ago or something, we may have 100% have been able to see the old Marquez. Marquez had a great weekend, and Marquez is very much relevant again, but I'm 100% sure we've seen Marquez's last championship. He can fight at the front here and there. He's still probably going to get a win or two this year, and he's going to be relevant. He's going to make some races fun. But he just couldn't touch Martin or Bagnaia.
Well, we will see, because, I mean, it is still a new bike. It's his fourth weekend on this bike.
Yeah, it's also, like I said, Pedro Acosta's fourth weekend on this bike. And the GP was the very first time he finished ahead of Pedro Acosta.
That is, yeah. In fairness, he's crashed out of quite a few races already, but
still. Yeah.
I think what you're saying is that Marquez has probably kind of entered the twilight years that yes. Rossi was in, that everybody was in denial about.
Yes, Marquez is definitely fading. He hasn't faded quite as much as I thought he did, because the Ducati has brought out his full potential again. But I don't think we're going to see. Just Bagnaia just trashed him when it came down to that battle, and he just didn't have anything for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that pass that Bagnaia did to pass Marquez and Martin to get in those first few turns or maybe it was to turn five. I can't remember what it was, but he did that incredible like double bike pass. That's the kind of shit Marquez used to do in his prime. Marquez isn't pulling those moves anymore.
Mm-hmm. I think I need a little bit more information. I need to see a few more races, but it's definitely a possibility. Because, I mean, you also have to keep in mind, like, Marquez, I mean, he's not crazy old, but also...
He's 31.
But he's also broken a lot of bones. How many times has he dislocated that shoulder?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's...
He's capable of great things, and I could see him coming in, like, second place.
There's also just a lot of talent out there.
Yeah. I think Marc Marquez is going to... We've got, like, five more years of Marc Marquez basically doing a Danny Pedrosa sort of thing, where in the second half of every season, he's good for two or three race wins, and he makes the season more interesting and all of that. And, you know, he's already a legend. Like, I think we've got about five more years of him being relevant, but never... a serious title contender, and then he's just gonna have to choose the point to bow out gracefully.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what I'm feeling.
It is crazy to think that if somebody could have gotten him to chill the fuck out in 2020 and also convinced him to switch teams earlier, like, he could be coming up on his 10th championship.
He would have already had it.
He could be surpassing Rossi with just a few different decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's really possible anymore.
Yeah.
With the injuries and the time lost, it's just too much.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad, but it's also, like, he's reached such an elite level of riding and championships and all this stuff that it's also, like, who fucking cares, right?
Yeah.
It
would have been nice to see him go for it, but, I mean, but I think at the end of the day...
He's already up there with Rossi and, what's his name? Really old Italian guy. Giacomo Agostini.
Yeah.
Like, he's already in that rarefied air of, you know, either the second or third greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It's no one could reasonably expect to get there. And not only that, but he gets to be in that top three greatest riders of all time, having raced against Rossi for a huge portion of that career.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't just the best,
he was racing against the best.
Yeah, I think, although he'll never have just the raw numbers, I think what he does have claim to is the most dominant period in MotoGP. During one of the most competitive.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, he was the top alien in the alien era. Yeah, I mean, it is absolutely crazy. All right. What else do we have to say about this weekend? Who else kind of stood out to us? I mean, Bagnaia looked strong for the first time this year.
I did see one thing at Jerez that I really didn't like.
What's that?
When Jack Miller got wiped out by Johann Zarco,
Was it Zarco or was it Oliveira?
I believe it was Zarco. But when Jack Miller got crashed into by another rider into the gravel trap, the stewards actively were trying to stop Jack Miller from fighting. And that's just not on.
Right. You need to let Jack do his thing. Was it him? I thought Zarco took out Espargaro.
No, I think Espargaro crashed on his own.
Did he? He Espargaro and Zarco crashed very close to each other in time. I thought Oliveira took out, but I could be wrong. But yeah, Jack was just taken the fuck out. Like there was nothing he could do about it. He just came up the inside and just cut like it. Yeah. It almost looked like it was done intentionally. It was egregious.
Well, I mean, I don't know what it is, but for some reason, just Jack just always seems like an attractive target on the track.
Well, it's sort of this thing, right? And I think this matches Jack's personality. For someone who says he's not looking for trouble, he sure finds it a lot.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know. I think it might be sort of, you know, if he's going to make some pushy moves out there, people don't mind pushy moves on him.
To be fair, you know, to be honest, we don't usually see like the, we don't see the preceding 30 seconds before he gets crashed into whenever it happens. Like,
yeah. Yeah, like, was there a little?
Let's play the tape back. Yeah. Let's see. Was there a?
Did he do any antagonizing to bring this on? Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It will be interesting to see though, because Jack Miller is on a factory KTM, and even though Acosta has essentially the same bike as the KTM team. I think KTM would probably like to have him in the KTM colors on the track.
I think Jack Miller's days on a factory bike are a little bit numbered. Simon Crafar was in the pits and he went up to, I can't remember the name of the KTM boss, and he goes, listen, I know that I make a lot of excuses for Jack Miller and Brad Binder. But I just have to say, it looks like they just can't put together a weekend right now. And the boss was like, yeah, that's it. Can't put a weekend together. I don't know. I don't know what's happening. And it was just kind of that simple. And Brad at least like has some good qualifyings, like gets some podiums, leads some laps. Right, but Jack's just been nowhere for 2 seasons and 4 races now. I don't know that you can be on a factory number one bike that long with those little results.
And, you know, to be honest, like, Jack was always, because Jack was one of the few riders, you know, well, like Marquez, he got promoted direct. You know, he was one of the not Marquez. Like Vinales, he got the direct promotion from Moto3 to MotoGP. And honestly, he's struggled a lot. He's also started off on, you know, on the LCR. Was it the LCR? Did Jack Miller start on it? Or what did he start?
I don't remember his first ride.
He was on the, was he on Tech 3?
Tech 3 sounds right.
What bike was he? I can't remember now, but I mean,
because he was teammates with Alex Marquez, and they had that incredible Moto 3 series on the Estrella Galicia Mark VDS Moto 3 bikes, where they just traded wins almost the entire fucking season. And I think it came down to the last race, which one of them, you know. But he and Alex Marquez were just on fucking fire. I think the 3 best Moto 3 performances I've ever seen. Number one has to be Brad Binder's Moto 3 season, where he just fucking dominated. And then second and third might be just a tie for Alex Marquez and Jack Miller. They were just both destined for stardom, and I don't know how Alex Marquez didn't skip to GP also that year. I know why. It's because Honda wanted to keep him on a Honda team in Moto2 and not and so they could realize their dream of the Marquez brothers on a team, which then they just fucking fritted away anyway.
Yeah. You know, they could have just funded LCR. Crazy idea, I know.
Yeah.
The richest team on the grid could throw LCR a fucking bone. Had a competitive satellite team.
Right. So, yeah, Jack, you know, had a sort of okay-ish time on Ducati. He was on a satellite Ducati, then he went to factory Ducati, now he's on KTM.
Honestly, he, you know, with the performance, the points he's put in per season, he really should be grateful for the bikes that he's had.
It's like, true. He's ridden some really nice bikes. Well, he's just got such a fandom that people don't mind. And they're like, he'll be good for a win or two per season, and he's got this huge following because he's such a character. But, I kind of see, okay, you know, long shot here. Like, if someone will give me 10-1 odds, I'll go next year, Trackhouse Racing, Jack Miller and Joe Roberts.
Yeah, why not?
For 10-1 odds, I'll do it, right? It wouldn't be the craziest thing for Oliveira to go back to KTM. Oliveira knows that bike.
Mm-hmm.
Put all their eggs in the basket of Binder, like, getting all their results and have Oliveira do more bike development.
I don't know. I think
Oliveira would go to Gas, and they would put Pedro Acosta on the big boy KTM. Yeah,
I think as soon as Pedro gets a win, whether it's a sprint race or a Sunday race, he's pretty much guaranteed to go to KTM. I mean, it's
a done deal. Yeah, it's been the plan this whole time. And it's time to put up or shut up. And I think I think they have to keep Binder, because Binder gets some sort of results, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he makes some mistakes, whatever, but he's fast. He gets camera time. He scores points, and he sells merch. And he's a likable guy. Jack just doesn't have the points to match his fame right now. And it kills me to say this, because on the right day, Jack is just so fucking fast and so aggressive and so fun to watch. But he just has not been able to make it work on this KTM bike.
Yeah, I mean, for people like that to stick around, we need, like, three more of this, like, current Moto 3 season where, like, because, I mean, really, we went through kind of a big lull where there was like one or two prospects per season going up into MotoGP, and now it's just fucking stacked and there's more talent coming behind them, and like next year, like five or six people have to go because there's all this new talent coming up behind them.
Well, okay, but you can't get rid of Quartararo because, one, nobody even wants to ride a Yamaha anyway. And two, he's a two-time world champion. Like, the problem is not Quartararo. The problem is Yamaha, right?
Well,
Yamaha is lucky to keep Quartararo. He's already talked about jumping ship.
So what was the rumor that, like, he was in talks with, like, Tech 3, who might switch to Aprilia?
Well, VR46 is talking about going back to Yamaha, which is weird. But
but are they waiting until the new displacement?
I thought it was next year. I thought VR46 was going to go 2025 Yamaha. And maybe Yamaha has like a whole new engine or something secret going on. Because that's the only thing that explains Quartararo staying with them.
Or they're just paying out a shit ton of money. Like,
yeah, it could be that too. It could be that too. Yeah, Lynn Jarvis hasn't been getting much camera time. I wonder at Yamaha if there's something kind of secret in the works. Because why would Rossi think about having all these Italian riders on Italian bikes under the VR46 flag and throw all of that into disarray, right? Because, sure, like, Bezzecchi's not exactly setting the world on fire, but he's not doing, like, a shit job.
Well, he's doing better than a lot of people that should be doing better than him. So,
right, right. Yeah, he's up in the podium places on a satellite bike. You know, that's Rossi yellow. Right? You know, that sounds like mission accomplished to me. So, yeah, there's got to be some sort of reason that they're in talks for that. You know, at some point, there's got to be talks of Jorge Martin going to factory Ducati and bump Enea like down to a different Ducati, which I don't think would make much difference to Enea.
I don't know if Jorge Martin is going to be going to a factory Ducati. The thing is, when you really think about it, as much as we love to talk about how much like Ducati cheats, which they totally do, and how kind of ridiculous they are on the factory side, when it comes to their riders, you know, they've kind of like really gone for the goody two shoes route for quite a while. You know, even Dovizioso was really kind of clean, by the book, polite. They don't really go for bad boys. And Martin is kind of going the Raul Fernandez route of being just really bitter about the fact that he's not the favorite child right now.
I think what would make me a bigger fan of Ducati, I mean, I'm always going to be a fan of Ducati, is if we had Jorge Martin and Bagnaia in the same garage just staring bullets at each other, just staring daggers at each other constantly.
You know what? They could
that
do
that kind of drama within one garage. How can you pass that up?
They could do the Rossi Lorenzo.
Yeah.
Like put a divider up in the garage.
Uh huh. Yeah. I think they could build a Rossi Lorenzo era type of, you know, these every weekend, which one of these two is it that's going to be getting first and which one's going to be getting second, and just make all the focus on them. Because that was a brilliant thing at Yamaha when it was like, yeah. Well, yeah, Yamaha is going to win this weekend. But it's just which Yamaha. Those were good days. And I'd love a year or two of that out of Ducati. Factory yeah. Ducati. I don't know. I mean, I think they like their thing right now where it's like, hey, they've got like the right guy on the satellite team to be like, why don't you win the season and like show everybody how good you are? And the other guy's like, are you going to let this guy on the satellite bike beat you? You know, because there's no love lost between the two of them right now. They're just so like, you know, it might even be a thing where outside of MotoGP, they could be great friends. Who's to say? But because they're two super competitive guys and they're on different teams, but they're both Ducati, like they have to hate each other or else like their whole psychology of racing doesn't work. And so that is good. We're halfway there, but put them in the same fucking garage, put them on the same flight to each race, right? You know, put them on the same plane, put them on the same bus every once in a while. And let's just let this really boil over.
Or maybe Ducati is actually, maybe Gigi Delinea is a fucking genius and he's actually fomenting all of this. Maybe he's talking to Bagnaia and saying, are you taking this season seriously? Because if you're not, this guy's going to take your seat next year.
Yeah.
And then he's going to Jorge Martin. He's like, you were so close last year. But if you win this season.
Listen, we all know you're better. You just like crashed a couple times.
Yeah, right? It was like, so close. But we know, you know, you're a little bit younger. You know, you got a bit more talent, but yeah, you got the same bike. But if you win, you're going to get the factory contract.
Yeah, we'll give you both bikes. Right.
Yeah. But like and their mom, yeah, he's just playing them off each other. Like, I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't either. Yeah, who knows? Okay, I think we've covered Jerez pretty well here.
This is my favorite race in the last 2 years.
This is a really good one. There is something here for everyone. Marquez getting a podium. We got the points getting closer between Martin and Bagnaia. So there's already a little like a championship heating up by the fourth round. That's really good. Mm-hmm. We got
an American championship leader.
An American championship. Yeah. The only thing is Moto 3 is underperforming, but who gives a shit? It's fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be amazing every single year. We're good on that. Yeah, do we have anything else for this episode in general? I could talk about the Lambretta a little bit. It's not super exciting. It's just that I've come to the horrible conclusion that whilst the engine is still perfect on the Lambretta, the wiring is so bad, I have to disassemble all the bodywork again and replace all of the wiring. Because I just can't trust any of it.
Yeah.
The wires from the light switch, there was a second ground for the horn in there. That is like a second place that the horn is grounding out within the light switch. And then I rode it to the grocery store the other day, and the wiring that was giving me... spark that was getting grounded out, and I got stranded at the grocery store, and the headlights still won't work because I can't find out where the wire's touching the frame to ground that out, because just all the wiring sheathing is in just such bad condition.
Do you know what we should do?
So I've ordered $100 worth of new wiring and looms and switches for the Lambretta, and I'm just redoing all of it.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was going to suggest, actually, this would have been a perfect opportunity.
Well, I haven't actually hit purchase. I've put it all in my shopping cart, and I was going to do that tonight. So first thing tomorrow, it gets mailed to me.
Since there isn't really a wiring harness on that bike.
There is.
Is there?
I mean, it's only 7 wires, but yes.
Well, what I was suggesting...
There's a proper loom.
What I was thinking is that we should go and... we should just go and down to Harbor Freight and just go get like 100 meters of like every color of wire and just like build out our.
Oh, do it ourselves? I'd kind of rather just pay the $40 for the loom that I know is all correct and all the wire lengths are the right and like a professional did all the crimps and just. $40 for the wiring loom itself, and then another $35 for the switch with the wiring loom attached to that. Doesn't seem like too. It's actually more like $75 for everything to be rewired. It's like $100 if I get a new junction box also. But
that's actually surprisingly cheap.
Yeah.
But no, I was thinking more about us actually just having all of that on hand after the fact.
I think if I just replace the whole wiring loom, it's like, you know, per dollar that I spent is another, like, year that it'll just be good again.
I mean, I'd go in on this with you, because just having all of that stuff on hand is super useful.
I've got a bunch of wires laying around for repairs and things. It's
well,
fine.
I do too, but do you have it? Do you have, like, everything to, like, color code everything?
No. But you never know, good. Like, what you're working on if you do, if you're going to use, like, what kind of crimp, if it's going to be the bullet connector or a blade connector or whatever. There's also, it's fine, it, whatever. Mm. Wire is cheap. You could just go buy wire for whatever you need at any point. Having it on hand is not super important. But I cannot ride the Lambretta again with the current wiring situation because I keep tracking down and finding problems, and then more keep popping up. It's whack-a-mole with the wiring on this fucking thing, and I'm over it. And $75 is too much to spend, because a year or two from now, when I change the whole thing from 6-volt to 12-volt, I'll have to change it all again. But whatever. It's just what I have to do. I mean, hopefully I can keep most of it in place, but because I'm going to have to go from the 4-pole stator to, I don't know how many poles for the 12 volts, and then the junction box is going to have to go, and it'll get replaced with a CDI and a regulator rectifier combo, and I think I can keep the same condenser, but I think the junction box in the front of it might have to change a little bit. The whole, like, anyway.
I mean, you could probably just pull the regular rectifier off.
All the bulbs will have to change.
YZ450.
Well, I guess the bulb, I don't know. Do the bulbs care if they're getting 6 or 12 volt? I think they do. Yes, they do. Yeah, they definitely do. The horn doesn't. But I may have to change the switch. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I may have to change the brake switch. We'll see.
No. The switch won't give a fuck.
Well, not the switch itself, but the wiring to it.
No.
No?
No. Peter.
I know the wire doesn't care about the voltage, but it's also going to be switching from AC to DC when I switch it to 12 volt.
What are you talking about?
Right now, the whole thing's AC.
Yes.
Like, there's just, like, a junction box with a voltage regulator. There's not even a rectifier on it right now. There's not even a fuse on it. Fuck a rectifier. It doesn't even have a fucking fuse. It's so simple. Which is why it's embarrassing and frustrating why I'm having these issues with the electronics. But, the wires are all, like, hidden in, like, pieces that are a pain in the ass to take off constantly.
Yeah, that is the one thing about those bikes, is the fact that, like, okay, if you're going to do this, because I know I'm going to get roped it at some point, you need to find a way to route the wires and, like, replace the, make sure that when you put, you know, those little, like, those little straps that hold the wires onto the, onto the underbone. Onto the frame,
yeah.
You need to make sure that the clasps for those are facing down, so we don't have to take the whole floorboards off.
Oh, no, I have to take the floorboard off because also I'm ordering all new rubber to go in between those.
I know you have to do it this time, but when you put it all back together, make sure that those are facing down so that they don't have to come off the next time. You've got a faff with this.
I think that's just Lambretta life. But also, the idea of putting a whole new wiring harness on it.
Lambretta life. I'm not allowed to make anything easier for myself.
Yeah, it's kind of the truth. So, the whole point of just saying, like, fuck it and putting all new wiring on is so, like, all the wiring sheathing is perfect everywhere. And I don't have to take it the fuck apart again. The only thing I'll ever have to remove again whilst I own it should be the rear floorboards to, like, maybe do something when I'm rebuilding the engine again, or, you know, because when I rebuild the engine, I also want to get a new kickstart lever and kickstart shaft, because the teeth on that are kind of getting a little chewed out. It's like, every, like, 100 kicks of the kickstart, I've got to, like, take a hammer and, like, loosen the kickstart lever and tap it back onto the shaft because it starts working its way out. The thing's from 1959. It's kind of impressive the kickstart shaft lasted this long, right? It's metal from 1959. It's kind of impressive. It's still sort of usable. But I'll replace it with something nice and tight, and it'll be good. I mean, I'm going to have to, like, take it apart and put new clutch plates in it next summer and all kinds of things. Replacing the kickstart shaft is whatever. I'm going to put the close ratio gearbox in it, too. So that whole back of the motor's got to come completely apart again. And me put it back together again. So who gives a shit? For the time being, the kickstart lever stays as it is, and I'm just gonna like bathe it in Loctite and see what happens. But this is Lambretta life. Yeah. But also, tomorrow I'm gonna put my welder for sale on Craigslist, and I think we need to just go ahead and buy the 12-volt welder kit.
You mean the 110?
110, sorry.
Yeah.
110. The 110 welder, just the regular outlet welder kit, and start building that battery box for the electric dirt bike.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm willing, I will throw up the money from the sale of my current welder to purchase the 110 welder. Because, well, we have two, like, ridiculous 220 welders. We don't need two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's about it for projects that we've got going on right now, besides the fact that you are on the lookout for a lift.
Well, I'm on the lookout for a few things, and...
Yeah, let's talk about this. Are you still interested in a Goldwing? Because at this point, I'm basically calling bullshit that you actually want a Goldwing.
I think it's on the back shelf for now. I've got too many other things. Well, for one thing, I'm crazy busy at work right now, and I don't have time for a lot of stuff. But I do need a lift. And also, just because of my schedule this year, I don't have time to do much of anything in terms of, like, actual motorcycle trips.
Google the dates on this. I think we should make an effort to go to the Four Corners rally this year.
Oh, okay. The Four Corners.
Mike from Creative Riding is thinking he's going to go. Mm. I told Junkie that if he rides on the back of Mike's Goldwing to Four Corners, I'll ride there on the fucking Lambretta, right?
You probably could, actually. There's basically frontage road.
It's all back roads to get there, yeah. It's like 500 miles of back roads to get to Durango from here, but I'd have to take frontage roads down I-25 until we got to the thing, but it'd be brutal because the Lambretta really tops out at like 39 miles an hour right now, but fuck it, I'll do it.
This banner is amazing.
I know. It's like, it's somewhere between Native American art and like a 1960s comic book.
Yeah.
So
it's it's the most amazing like promotional artwork ever, or the worst flag you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
And those are both great things. I love that on the website it's cropped, and you can't even see the whole thing.
Yeah, so this is August 29th to like 31st, I think, in Durango. So like it's a day's ride there and a day's ride back. I think we should try to do Four Corners.
Well, what does this actually entail?
It's a bike rally. So, I mean, look, there's workshops, there's racing, there's bike shows, there's music, there's tattoos.
There's a wall of death. There's a hill climb.
Also, a
rodeo.
Yeah, it's like real rodeo, too. It's like bull riding and shit. So
tattoos.
Yeah, this sounds up our alley.
This actually sounds pretty rad.
I know. I think it's really cheap, too. But look, there's like fucking PBR, like bull. Yeah, there's.
I don't think this is PBR.
Well, whatever it is, it's fucking. They're riding fucking bulls, like no saddle riding bulls, like that.
I mean, if there are lower standards of competition than PBR, I actually kind of want to go.
Right.
Do you want to see a man die?
I mean, bull riding is definitely my favorite part of rodeo. Second is a toss-up between mutton busting and what do you call it? Barrel racing. I love barrel racing. But, yeah, I think I prefer barrel racing to, like, the fucking Broncos and shit. But bulls are where it's fucking at. But yeah, look, there's like big group rides. There's hill climbing, and they're also racing drift trikes at this thing.
Ooh, okay. That sounds like a nightmare. That sounds like carnage.
Yeah. I can't remember where I saw that, but Four Corners, I think we should go.
This is sponsored by Progressive?
I guess so, yeah. I don't know, play the video. I don't know. See what's going on. But I think we should. This could be. Yeah, this, I mean, it's in Durango, so I would say rather than ride directly to Durango, the thing would be we should ride like on like Thursday afternoon. Ride to Glenwood Springs. And then from Glenwood Springs, it's only like 130 miles down to Durango, and we could do the $1 million highway and then just arrive like Friday afternoon, early evening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if this is in Durango, we can go the long way.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like go over I-70 and then down. Yeah.
Okay. We should give this a shot.
It looks like a fucking awesome time. Like, hopefully it's as lawless as Vintage Days, and if it's not, maybe we can bring some of Vintage Days' lawlessness to it.
We can bring some of that energy, yeah.
Exactly. But this looks like something that's exactly in between Sturgis and Vintage Days. In terms of the vibe, right?
Let's give it a shot. Yeah, I like this. We should do this.
Whoa, they just set a bike on fire in the promotional video. Did you see that?
Let me go back.
Go back like 20 seconds. Go back a little further than that. Come on, go again. Look. they just blew up a bike in the promotional video. I think this is our people.
We got to check this out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. All right. Keep your calendars open for the last weekend in August. And... yeah, I think our sort of events this year are Mile High Mayhem and this. And who knows, if this is crazy enough, maybe we don't need to make the ride all the way across the country to Vintage Days anymore.
I don't know. We'll see how
it goes. I don't know why we've been ignoring it for so long. But it seems like they've really upped their game in advertising it this year. So I'm like, okay, we have to take this shit seriously. Yeah, I think we've covered plenty, and look at this. We're at 2 hours. That's a good length. Let's end this episode. So I'm going to try to put this episode out tonight, if not tonight, tomorrow morning, which would be Monday, so everyone knows and is geared up for the ride this Saturday, this coming Saturday, May the 4th. Did you know also that we're going to be able to complete this ride without any fucking interruption from the Moto One Podcast Network Studios president? Because I was going through shit in his desk today, as I just often do. You know what I fucking found? A toy lightsaber. And not even one of those good ones. Do you remember when like the Phantom Menace came out and... like, you couldn't even get a lightsaber toy because they were all sold out. And it's like one of those little kid ones where to hold, like, the Darth Maul double lightsaber, like, both your hands are only, like, 4 inches apart.
Mm-hmm.
He had one of those. Yeah. So I don't think we'll have any Moto One interference. So anyway, let's remind everyone to stay safe, stay tuned, keep fighting and fucking the dragon. And maybe, I don't know, I think it's unlikely, but maybe on like Friday or something before Saturday morning, we could record movie commentary or something, because we're probably not going to be able to do the ride and record an episode next week. So you're either going to get no episodes for 2 weeks, or maybe we'll get in a movie commentary. We'll see. Can't make any promises. All right. So, yeah, keep fucking the dragon. Let's do it.
And I don't want to die. Just want to ride on my motorcycle.